All rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Bratfold, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this 13th day of June, 2024. Ready for arguments in our first case, State of Minnesota versus Damian Marshall, A240241. Each of the attorneys should be sure to state his name for the record before each leg of your argument so we have it for the oral record. With that, we'll hear from counsel for appellant.
May it please the court, Mr. Welsh. My name is Stephen Tallon, T as in Tom, A-L-L-E-N. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, City of Eden Prairie, State of Minnesota. First, before I get too far, I want to point out there was a typo in the respondent's brief. I'm guessing most of you caught it. The officer did not testify that he had conducted 10,000 arrests, but only 1,000. So that, to the extent that that matters to anyone, we've got that straight. This is a strange case. I probably never had a case, and I've been doing this for almost 40 years, that seemed as much like a bar exam or a law school question. But I'll start with the Torgerson case. I don't think Torgerson is controlling here. Torgerson changed the rules, kind of upset everyone for a while because we weren't sure what it meant. It's becoming a little clear now. Torgerson was the question of whether the odor of marijuana was a single factor probable cause to arrest, to search. It's not. We're not disputing that. And those aren't the facts that we have here. In this case, the officer testified.
So, counsel, I take it you're moving on to saying why the facts here are different from Torgerson?
Yes.
Is that right? Just if you don't mind going back for 2 seconds, and maybe it works better for you to do it later in your argument, but you commented that Torgerson changed the rules, right?
When marijuana was illegal, it was a reason.
If you want to just draw out
right.
your sentence
yeah.
a little bit more. So when you say it was a reason, you're saying it what provided
a reasonable basis
okay.
to proceed with an arrest and a search.
A search of a vehicle, odor of marijuana alone. Is
yes.
that what the Supreme Court says in Torgerson?
The Supreme Court says in Torgerson that that alone is not enough, that is a contributing factor. It's part of the totality of the circumstances, which is what this court is going to have to consider, what the totality of the circumstances were.
Right. What I'm trying to get at is this concept, you called it that way, that's why I'm asking you about it, that it's a change, that Torgerson was a change in the law. So why do you say that Torgerson is a change in the law? I didn't see that in the Supreme Court's analysis in Torgerson.
Well, it changed it because prior to Torgerson, as far as I understand, all of the cases that dealt with the odor of marijuana were at a time when the odor of marijuana, when marijuana was illegal in Minnesota. Once marijuana became legal, it became much like the odor of alcohol on a driver. It was the odor of a substance that, if abused,
is that the reasoning in the Supreme Court's case?
Well,
in Torgerson, I'm saying.
The Supreme Court, I think that's the reasoning. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the reason I'm asking is the Supreme Court, to me, seemed very specific in terms of saying what that they had never said adopted a bright line rule about probable cause and odor.
Well,
so when you say that it's a change in the law, what do you base that on in light of the way the Supreme Court discussed the law in Torgerson? And then I'll let you go on with your
okay.
argument.
I think all I can say in my defense is that seemed to be what Judge Moore thought also in his order.
I do see that in Judge Moore's comments. I'm asking is whether it's supported by Supreme Court case law.
I think it was simply because if you go back before marijuana was legal, that's when the cases came out. So this was a new case, a new set of facts, and I think they came to the right conclusion. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but I'm doing the best I can.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
So in this case, the officer sees a vehicle with dark tinted windows. He thinks they're too dark. He runs a check on the registration. He finds the registered owner has a felony warrant for him. He makes a determination to stop the vehicle. The officer testified the vehicle was slow to stop. It was interesting here because Judge Moore found that the officer really believed the vehicle was slow to stop, but that belief was unreasonable, which I think means it wasn't credible for the officer to believe that, but the judge doesn't really say that.
I think the district court is a little more specific. So actually said that the driver was prompt in stopping, right?
Well, the officer said he was slow in stopping.
I know that. The district court found.
The district court saw the video, right, and the judge's conclusion was that Mr. Marshall was stopped appropriately.
I think the district court said prompt, right? And
maybe
and looked
prompt
at the video. It said,
yeah,
it was 30 seconds. So I where do you want to go with this, counsel?
Well, all I'm saying is, yeah, the standard is normally what does a reasonable police officer believe, and the court should defer to the reasonable police officer based upon their experience and training, et cetera.
Can I ask a quick question about the record? When do the lights go on? Mr. Marshall, was he already turning, or did he turn in response to the light?
He turned in
response.
He turned after the lights,
went on.
After the
we
lights went on,
why,
he turned.
But, right.
Then he didn't stop.
Right. Okay.
Until the siren was sounded.
Okay. I just wanted to confirm that. That's
at any rate, be that as it may, I don't. And I guess I'm assuming that the way Judge Moore phrased this, he's claiming that the officer was not credible when he said he didn't stop appropriately. I'm not sure that that was right, given the deference that courts normally give, but I don't think it's crucial to the analysis of the case either. Mr. Marshall was stopped. Then there's another part where the judge disagrees with the officer. He doesn't really call him not credible. He says he believes the officer really believed this, but the judge doesn't think it's credible, and that's when the officer testified that upon approaching the car and shining his flashlight into the car, he observed that Mr. Marshall's pupils were constricted, and this was at night.
So does that matter, the timing of it? Because they were going to arrest him because of the bench warrant, right? Because the warrant for his arrest.
And that's my argument. That doesn't matter.
All right.
Shortly thereafter, the officer took Mr. Marshall out of the car. And then the judge does find that at that point, the officer had plenty of opportunity to see that the eyes were constricted.
So what do we do with the officers? Well, the evidence in the search warrant, the probable cause statement, that it was because of the odor of marijuana that the search of the vehicle was conducted, and then I think the officer testified that it was
based on what the officer found,
that he then decided to do the nystagmus test and the other DRE evaluation.
And that's when the court has to apply the principle of objective probable cause. The officer may not have verbalized it in the search warrant. He may not have felt he needed to, but the fact remains that at that point, he did have objective probable cause. He had the odor of burnt marijuana, the constricted eyes, maybe the slow to stop, maybe not.
So is there evidence in the record that the constricted pupils and the odor of burnt marijuana, that would have made him do a DRE evaluation?
Well, The case law in Minnesota is,
or that it was there was reasonable suspicion that, so then he expanded it.
Case law is, and I'm not sure if there's a lot of case law about marijuana, but the case law with alcohol, there's a ton of it, the odor of alcohol and one other thing, There's actually some cases that say just the odor of alcohol. I disagree with those cases because it's legal to have alcohol. But the fact that I disagree with the appellate courts has never bothered any of the appellate judges that I've known very much. But clearly, there was at least the odor and the constricted pupils, which this officer has way more experience than any other officer I've ever met in dealing with these things. He's been trained. He teaches. He gave testimony that I think the judge found credible, that these were indicia of intoxication. And the fact is the timing, which seemed to be very important during the hearing, isn't really important. Mr. Marshall was going to be arrested. He had a felony warrant. He was going to be arrested. He was going to be taken out of his car. His car was going to be towed. Now, during the district court hearing, they raised the Rohde case. Rohde's discernible on the facts. Rohde was someone who was not going to be taken into custody. They were going to leave them there, and then they decided to search the car, but the person was going to go away. Mr. Marshall was not going to be asked, please report to the jail at a time when it's convenient for you. He was going in for the felony. So when the officer made a lot of these observations, and some of them were back at the police station when he did the full DRE exam, there was no additional inconvenience or imposition on Mr. Marshall because he was going to jail. And so if it happened at
so
minute
counsel,
three...
help me understand how that's relevant to our analysis about the search of the vehicle. Just spell it out for me.
The vehicle was going to be towed.
Okay, so you are relying on the inventory search as an inevitable discovery.
The inventory search.
Discovery.
And okay. You know, there's some question...
District court rejected that, right?
The district court seemed to rely on the fact that the officer had questions that he was going to... that he bounced back and forth with his fellow officer. Should we tow? Should we not tow? It sounds like the policy was to tow. It sounds like maybe the officer wasn't going to follow the policy, but he did. And then the search that Judge Moore seemed to rely on quite a bit was this search of the backpack or the bag that Mr. Marshall asked the officer to get. And the judge ruled that that was unreasonable. Mr. Marshall was told the car was going to be towed. He asked the officer, could you get my stuff?
So, counsel, when I listen to the videotape, I don't hear Mr. Marshall asking the officer to go get my stuff. Mr. Marshall says something to the effect, I could look up the quote, but should I go get my stuff? He's talking about himself.
Okay, and then the officer said...
The officer says, don't worry about it, I got it, because I'm searching your vehicle.
Okay.
Right? I mean, isn't that...
No, you're right.
Okay.
You're right. But there wasn't any, no, leave my stuff in the car. It appeared as if it was consensual. Mr. Marshall wanted his stuff.
Did not find consent, right?
The judge did not. Did not. So, you know, that's your problem, I guess, to deal with.
That's our problem to deal with, counsel? Is that what you said?
Well, I mean, you have to decide if that was consent or not.
Yeah,
is that,
that's exactly right.
Is that unreasonable and clearly erroneous
right.
or
and
not?
What's your best argument, counsel?
My best argument is that it certainly appeared as if it was consent.
Well, how do you get there? So
I get there by...
I don't understand that. You already agreed with me. Mr. Marshall did not give consent or even ask the officer to get his backpack. So I'm confused where you get consent.
I think it was implied in the circumstances. There.
And how am I going to imply that?
When the officer says, I'll get it, and Mr. Marshall agrees, lets it go, then I think that's implied consent.
While he's in custody in the back of the squad.
While he's in custody, but there's no indication that the officer leaned on him, or it's not like consent that sometimes comes up where it's do you want me to do this, or would you rather have me arrest you and your girlfriend and your children and take them all to jail? Kind of, there was no coercion on the part of the officer. The officer, had an obligation to do an inventory search of the vehicle.
The officer did not identify it as an inventory search at that time, correct? I mean, the officer was quite clear in his statements to Mr. Marshall that he, something to the effect of, I have to search the vehicle because of the odor of marijuana. So we're really back to that, aren't we?
We're back to the objective,
yeah, okay.
The objective probable cause. And it's important that the court remember that probable cause to search or probable cause for the search warrant is only probable cause that the search will uncover evidence that a crime has committed. It's not the same as probable cause to arrest, where here's evidence that you did it. It's probable cause that if we look, we're probably going to find something, or there's a likelihood we'll find something. And I think it's different.
Hey, counsel, your time is up.
My
now
time is up. I'll sit down.
Five minutes on rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Melvin Welch, W-E-L-C-H, and I am here today on behalf of Mr. Marshall. Your Honor, I agree with the appellant insofar that this is an interesting case. And Judge Moore, whom I've been in front of numerous times, and he hasn't always gone my way, in fact, usually he doesn't, he acknowledges as much. And this case and the investigation was conducted in an abnormal DWI manner. So in your typical DWI case, or at least the ones that I think we've all reviewed or even prosecuted or defended, law enforcement have those observations of indicia of intoxication and then go about investigating the DWI. That's not what happened here. It was a little bit backwards. And that's where I think that the appellant gets into a difficulty, because you can't take this away from Torgerson. Torgerson was pending at the time, litigation was going through, this case was simultaneously occurring. Law enforcement articulates the very same basis as the basis that was for the search in Torgerson, and he acts according to that belief. Now, the court had asked earlier whether or not, Judge Bradfield, I believe it was you, asked, was that what Torgerson said, that it was it's no longer a bright line rule? And that's not what the court said. The court had said it's never been a bright line rule, and it cited to a number of different cases. You have to forgive me, I just can't remember. Shinzing, I think it was one. And I
so,
can't
counsel,
remember.
I appreciate what the Supreme Court said in Torgerson about how it has shied away from bright line rules regarding probable cause, and we have never held that the odor of marijuana or any other substance alone is sufficient to create the requisite probable cause to search a vehicle. So when the Supreme Court said that, are they referring only to their own case law, or are they also referring to the entire body of Minnesota precedential?
You know, Your Honor, I think when they were talking about that, when they cited directly to Shinzing and State versus Burbach, those were the two cases that they were comparing in the analysis. So I don't think it was the entire body, but I think it was using those two as primarily.
Maybe I'm being too vague. I'm asking whether the Supreme Court's only talking about Supreme Court case law or also talking about case law from the Minnesota Court of Appeals.
Supreme Court.
I think we all recognize there's some controversy here about whether, first of all, what did the Minnesota Supreme Court case law say before Torgerson?
Sure.
And secondly, what did the Minnesota Court of Appeals precedential case law say before? In light of the fact that, at least in the briefing, appellant has raised the good faith exception, which I didn't see your response to that. I want to make sure I hear it today.
Sure.
Maybe I missed it. Yeah.
No, I thought that was along the lines of the inevitable discovery. I guess the good faith exception. If it's more argument on past appellate practice, then my argument today would be based on Torgerson, which was acknowledged, or which was identifying under State versus Burbach and Shinzing, that they had never had a bright line rule. And let's face it, I mean, as practitioners, we get a lot of the cases, and the court gets a lot
when
of the
cases.
When
you say they never had a bright line rule, is the they the Supreme Court or is it this court? That's I'm
they
I'm
the just, Supreme Court.
Okay.
I would
agree that this court has at least a couple of precedential opinions and many non-precedential opinions in which we've said the odor of marijuana alone provides probable cause for a motor vehicle search.
I would agree that there are cases where it does identify that that alone is a basis for probable cause.
So if we're talking about the good faith exception, what we're looking at, I believe, is whether the police reasonably believed that what they were doing was permissible under law. Would it have been reasonable for the police to have believed at the time of this incident that case law allowed them to search based on odor of alcohol or odor of marijuana alone?
I would submit to the court, obviously, as the respondent, my argument is going to be no, it's not reasonable for them to believe it. And I think that this.
Why was it not reasonable if this court had precedential case law saying odor of marijuana alone provides probable cause for motor vehicle search under the warrant exception, even though the Supreme Court had never said that? I mean, there are many examples of areas where this court has said one thing, the Supreme Court doesn't review that decision and doesn't say anything inconsistent until Torgerson.
Yeah.
And so we have that period of time where everyone's relying on this court's precedential opinions. Why wouldn't the police be entitled to do that?
And you know, Judge Larkin, this is kind of that cycle that we get in with these cases. So ultimately, Supreme Court says a position. We do our best in practice to make it clear for those that are enforcing the law or those that are complying with the law. And then the court gets a copious amount of cases where it has to figure out whether or not they're acting reasonable. Why I'd say it's unreasonable, firstly. I would say it's unreasonable because the Minnesota Supreme Court has been fairly consistent, with the exception recently of the good faith exception under then existing appellate case law that did support from the Supreme Court level down. I'm blanking on the case right now. It was a DWI, wasn't it the DWI case? Yeah, that's right, it was a DWI case. But then more recently, I think it was State versus Malecha, was another case where the Supreme Court was looking at reliance on what was in the system. It was an arrest of a gal based on a technical error in the court system, and law enforcement saw the warrant. They confirmed the warrant even through the system, and but it was based on an error because that warrant had been quashed. And the Supreme Court said, "Well, you know, if there is errors, they do happen. But unfortunately, we're not going to expand the good faith exception to include that. That's why, at least under my argument to this court, we shouldn't expand it there.
That seems a little far afield from the good. As I understand the good faith exception, the reasoning is this: if police officers act without a warrant, and they're doing that because they reasonably believe precedential authority supports it, we would apply the exception because the purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter illegal police conduct. If the police in a particular situation objectively are not engaged in illegal conduct because there are court of appeals precedential opinion saying they can do what they're doing, why wouldn't we apply the good faith exception there? Because in that situation, the police aren't necessarily doing anything illegal. They're just doing what our court has said they can do.
Sure.
So there's no bad conduct to deter in that situation.
Well, I would submit to the court, in such a circumstance, firstly, there's conflicting law at the Court of Appeals based on whether or not it's single factor, whether or not it's in the totality of circumstances. This court's been fairly consistent, I believe, in articulating that searches or seizures have to be reviewed on a totality of the circumstances.
But we've also been fairly consistent in saying odor of marijuana alone provides probable cause for a search. Back when marijuana was completely illegal, and then even after we went to a petty misdemeanor amount. I mean, until Torgerson, this is what we've been saying. Now, obviously, Torgerson now is the law. You can't have a single factor probable cause finding based on the odor of marijuana. But I'm just concerned that that was not reasonably viewed to be the law in Minnesota until Torgerson.
The only thing I guess I would cite, Your Honor, and I think the Supreme Court is obviously they're the top down on what the interpretation of the law is, and they're the ones that are saying in Torgerson, hey, it's never been applied as a single bright line factor, and in fact, those are always
discouraged. They're not saying it's never been applied. They're saying we've never said that, meaning there's no Supreme Court case that endorses this approach.
Yep, I would agree with that. I mean, without doing.
And do you agree that if this court issues a precedential opinion and the time for review has passed, that is precedential authority, even though the Supreme Court has not addressed the issue?
Can you clarify that for me, Your Honor? I just didn't quite follow that one.
Oh, sure. Say we issue a precedential decision stating a principle, a rule of law. The time for appeal passes, so it's not reviewed by the Supreme Court. It's precedential decision stating a rule of law. But the Supreme Court has never addressed that issue. So there's no Supreme Court case supporting what we've said.
Yep.
Is our precedential statement of a rule of law still binding authority within the state, despite the fact that the Supreme Court has not addressed the issue?
Yeah, I got you. So essentially, we've got a scenario. This court reviews that legal question. It's a novel legal question. It doesn't go up on review. And so is that binding? Yeah, for the time being, I would agree with the court that it would be binding at that time, yes.
So if it's binding for the time being, meaning until the Supreme Court does something to say this is not the rule of law, then why aren't officers justified in relying on that?
Well, because there was, because at least as far as the odor of marijuana and what the court talks about in Torgerson with reference to Schinzing and Burbach, it's saying it was never a bright line. It was always a totality of the circumstances test. So this court, in interpreting that, may have put its stamp on it as well, but ultimately it's going to yield back to that original case of Burbach or Schinzing saying, no, it's a totality test. And so
what you're describing, I think, is what we do when the Supreme Court says a law is unconstitutional. And I think then what the case law says is once a determination is made that a law is unconstitutional, that means it's never been valid. It's never been constitutional. It's sort of a retroactive finding. So
it is a little bit like that, yes.
But it's not completely like that because here, when we're talking about the good faith exception, we're not asking, oh, was our prior case law also invalid as a result of this new ruling? What we're asking is, did police officers reasonably rely on that case law in the absence of something telling them they couldn't?
And I would submit that they did not reasonably rely on it because we have these cases out of Burbach and Schinzing saying it's a totality test, it's not a bright line test. And though the court may have said, and I agree with you, there are examples of this court in unpublished and I likely published opinions as well saying, hey, you know, if there's an odor alone, it should be enough. But again, that's usually citing to Burbach, which in Burbach says it's a totality test.
But so do you see how this is raising a much bigger issue in terms of our criminal justice system and the notion that our precedential opinions are binding across the state unless they're overruled?
If you're trying to convince me that stare decisis is important, I agree, and I submit. But, you know, I don't think we quite get there in this case, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. So when law enforcement stop, and firstly, Cherries come on after he has signaled his turn. Cherries come on. He's in his turn. Officer says it was a little bit slow to stop. Judge says, well, there was a driveway that he was going past to get to the curb. That's a reasonable thing. You don't park in the middle of a driveway. So that's why the judge said he was reasonable. Officer gets up there. Now, the officer testifies in the transcript. I noticed right away that his eyes were constricted. And at least the judge goes through the analysis of the video very carefully and says, well, he really didn't have the opportunity to see it. Now, I believe that you had made that observation. I just don't think it was at this point. And so, again, you know, the Judge Moore is very aware that we're dealing in a situation where Torgerson has come down, and so we're looking at justifying objectively these interactions on a different basis. And that's a perfect, and he even says it as much in the final of his analysis. This is a reasonable argument. This is a good argument, right? Because we're trying to figure this out under new circumstances. But how the officer acts is indicative of how he is thinking at that time. He doesn't check the nystagmus of Mr. Marshall when he's outside of the vehicle. He doesn't check the nystagmus until after he has him in the squad and he searched the car and he's found the codeine cold medicine bottles and sees that it's been opened and that there's likely been consumption. At this point, it makes sense because he noticed it was constricted. The officer testified that usually when there's marijuana use, it's not constricted, they're dilated. So it's opposite of what he would have seen. And it wasn't until he conducted that search pursuant to the odor of marijuana that he gathered enough evidence to justify some type of suspicion.
And that, counsel, if you don't mind, I read the district court's findings a little differently, that the district court found the officer first noted that Mr. Marshall's pupils were constricted when he stepped outside the vehicle before he was placed in the squad car.
Yes, I agree.
You agree with that?
Okay. Yeah.
Why isn't that enough, counsel?
Well, there could very well be something to it, but the officer didn't have an objective suspicion at that time, and his actions are consistent with that.
Objective or subjective?
Well, I guess subjective.
And then
subjective.
What are we to make of the difference?
I'd say subjective. If it was an objective indication, we wouldn't really know what it's indicating of. I mean, he said, well, I've seen constricted pupils that may be consistent with an analgesic substance that was used. But in this case, that's not what he was smelling, the odor of marijuana. He didn't have any evidence of anything else, which is where he was getting to that hunch, the suspicion that there may be something more, which is why he did the additional investigation before he did any testing in support of that suspicion.
Can I ask one more question?
Please.
Oh.
Larkin. So Judge Moore said, okay, if we redact the search from the search warrant, there wasn't enough for the DRE evaluation, I guess, is one way of his. So what's your best argument for why we can't just redact what was found as a result of the search? You've got strong odor of marijuana, which the officer said, in fact, was emanating off of Mr. Marshall, after Mr. Marshall got out of the car. You've got the constricted pupils and the DRE evaluation. I mean, that would ordinarily be enough for a search warrant for a blood test. Yes or no?
If there was DRE evaluation and he found indicia of it, yeah, absolutely. I agree that there would be a basis for a search warrant. But
you're saying the constricted pupils alone wouldn't be enough to then conduct to create reasonable suspicion to do the DRE evaluation. Is that where you're kind of resting your argument?
Yes. So the officer here says constricted pupils he does not associate with the consumption of marijuana. At least that's in his, not 10,000 cases. Thank you, Mr. Talon. But in his considerable experience. So something's going on, or at least his eyelids are constricted, which we'll accept that he made that observation. I think that there may have been some reaching in light of Torgerson, that they have to reevaluate facts observed at the time, and that's okay. But the odor of marijuana, does that get him? So he has odor of marijuana, but he doesn't have an associated physiological response to the consumption of marijuana. So I would submit to the court, there is not the basis to have a reason.
Constricted pupils alone would not be enough, you're saying, to then create reasonable suspicion for the DRE.
That would be my argument here. Yeah, I mean, I hate it to be obviously because I'm the respondent, but I think that because the officer himself testifies, there's an association between dilated pupils and marijuana, not constricted pupils and marijuana. He doesn't have that thread to make that objective assessment, and that after that he's operating on suspicion. Yes, Judge Larkin.
This was at night, correct?
This was at night, 2:30 a.m. I believe.
So wouldn't it be odd to have constricted pupils at that time?
Well, officer did testify how he had his flashlight in his face, and so there's going to be some physical response to it. The officer does notably say, well, I brought the flashlight up very slowly when he was first interacting with the car, which wasn't the case. It was not supported by the evidence in the video. It may be that he's remembering a different response at a different time, but again, we're dealing with that, all right, Torgerson happened. So thank you for your
Judge
time.
Judge Bradfield, do you have any additional questions?
Thank you. I'll try not to take my whole time. The question about the constricted
pupils. Part of what the testimony was that there was no change when the light was on them, that he shined the light kind of in Mr. Marshall's lap that illuminated the scene but wasn't directly in his eyes, and then he moved it up to his eyes and there was no change. So they didn't close down. They were closed to begin with. Going back to the beginning, it's like a law school exam or a bar exam question.
Counsel, could you address the argument you've made for application of the good faith exception to the warrant requirement here?
I think you made it better than I could, Judge. It's the officers have to rely on what the courts and their prosecutors tell them the law is. And there is a lot of law that said this was okay just based on that. However, I would argue that the constricted pupils was the odor plus that has always been held
okay. To good faith exception.
I think if this court finds that the officer did not observe or was not, his testimony about the constricted pupils was not credible, which I don't think even Judge Moore said. He said initially, you know, he kind of gave this fudgy answer about he believed the officer believed it, but he didn't believe the officer could see it. But clearly, once Mr. Marshall was taken out of the car and they're standing next to the car, the judge finds that he saw the constricted pupils then.
So
that's
your
enough.
Argument is that the odor of alcohol or the odor of marijuana plus the observation of constricted pupils provided reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity sufficient to justify the DRE eval, and it's not necessary to consider what was in the car to get to that point.
Certainly that, plus the case law is that's objective probable cause to arrest. I mean, at least in I don't know if there's been a marijuana case like that, but there's lots of alcohol cases that say the odor of alcohol and one other indicia is probable cause, objective probable cause to arrest, even if the officer doesn't realize it at the time. I did have a case years ago where one of my officers didn't.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt you. I just appreciate your time is slow or is short here. So if you'd respond directly to Mr. Welch's argument about the constriction showing something different from the odor of marijuana, because constriction of the pupils is not consistent with use of marijuana.
No, and
at
the
least according to our officer here.
And,
so,
and the officer testified that he was concerned about multiple drug use, that other drugs could have caused this.
Right, but you're very quickly going from odor of marijuana, constricted pupils, to impairment. And if we where do we get to the impairment? Just because there are possible multiple drugs used? That goes
straight
to impairment?
Because there are possible other drugs involved. People who may be using, at least in the officer's belief, and I believe it was reasonable, that Mr. Marshall was using marijuana, at least sometime in the not too distant past. And the officer has had experience with people using multiple drugs. And so it's not that he just has to apply for a search warrant to search for marijuana, and if they find methamphetamine or oxycodone, that's suppressed. He's saying here's an indication of someone who's using drugs, driving, and there's a reasonable basis to believe that this person may be impaired. I want to get the warrant to see what evidence I can. And the DRE exam is just trying to get more probable cause. That's what police officers do, and that's what we tell them to do. You know, get as much as you can, because you never know what's going to stand up and what's not going to stand up. And which gets me to the one, and this will be my last, I guess, the issue that the defense raised a lot during the argument of alternate explanations. And I think the case law is very clear that the courts should not say, well, there might be another reason. If one of the reasons is impairment, that's good enough for the purposes of probable cause. And my time is up, and I'll sit down. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for your briefing and answering our questions this morning. The case is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days.